Hey everybody, this is Sophia Nelson and welcome back to the Redefining Freedom podcast. Today we're talking about campus protest, illiberalism, and what's happening to America's college students. Let's talk about it. Hey everybody, this is your host Sophia Nelson and welcome back to the Redefining Freedom podcast. We have a lot to get to today, this May 11th, 2024. It's Mother's Day weekend, and Sunday, May 12th, is Mother's Day. So please, if you still have mom with you, even if you're estranged and it's not traumatic for you, reach out, send a card, make a phone call, send a text, whatever. Just let her know that she matters and let her know that you care. Mothers are very special indeed. They have an impact on us that's long-lasting, long while they're here and long after they're gone. So to you mothers out there that listen, happy Mother's Day. Get some rest and respite. Let everybody take care of you for once and enjoy the weekend, enjoy the day. Today I want to talk with you about what's been going on our college campuses. Of course, you know, I was thinking about when I first started talking about this issue of free speech and campus protest and cancel culture, etc. 3 years ago, it almost seemed like I was talking to an echo chamber. And I felt like I was on an island. I felt like I was in some unique kind of nightmare, to keep it honest with you. And it's not that what I went through in 2021 on my college campus at Christopher Newport University in Virginia was unique. It wasn't. But it really was something that was kind of creeping up on us. It was something that was happening. Lawsuits were being filed. Groups like ADF and FIRE and other organizations around the country were really beginning to focus in on the rise of what we are going to talk about today, which is the rise of illiberalism. Look the word up. And I want to commend an article to you written by CNN's Fareed Zakaria in 1997, called The Rise of a Liberal Democracy. Google it. It's available in PDF. It's available online. And read it and sit with it, because you will really be stunned at how present and how correctly Fareed Zakaria assessed, not just at the time, the illiberalism on the rise of other world democracies, but particularly the fact that he predicted that it was likely going to end up here in the United States as well. And so I want to talk with you today a little bit about that illiberalism and what it means, and to give you some context about what is happening on our nation's college campuses right now, because it's not anything new. Protest has been with us since the day before this republic was born. It's how this republic was born. You know, if you remember your history, you remember the Boston Tea Party, you remember Shays' Rebellion, you remember all the things that led up to the colonies and the Continental Congress saying enough. No taxation without representation, no more abusing us, no more violating our rights, coming into our homes, coming into our places of business, killing us at will, shooting us in the streets. We are going to create a new nation where we have rights, where we're free, where individual liberty is prized above all. And I want to park there for a moment because, again, what you're seeing happening now in our nation's protests, I have three thoughts. First, it is lawful, it is constitutional, it is freedom for young people to be able to assemble and to protest and to raise their voice for or against something. What is not lawful, what is not constitutional, whether you're on a public university, which has a much higher standard, but private universities that get federal funds and Title IX or Title VI money, et cetera, they are likewise constrained in what they can and what they can't do with respect to the First Amendment. And it is never legal, lawful, or right, or in the name of freedom, to suppress the speech of others, to bully, heckle, deny, menace, harass others who don't share your viewpoint on the same campus, in the same government agency, wherever it is that you are. And it is never right, ever, for us to single out a group of citizens, whether they be Jewish citizens, Black citizens, gay citizens, female citizens, and on, and make them have to hide in libraries or in closets or be moved off of their place of work or their place of study. That is never okay. And we have to know the difference between those two things, because clearly we do not know the difference between those two things. And it's really, really important that we understand that there are limitations to freedom and there are limitations to free speech. And what we see happening right now on our nation's college campuses is not protected speech. And that's where I want you to park for a moment, because a lot of you are confused. A lot of you are hearing that, well, this is just speech being returned for speech. No, that's not true. And we're going to get into this a little bit more, but I think it's really, really important that we really stop for a moment and just understand where we are. And this rise of illiberalism, this rise of, well, let's define the word illiberalism, okay? Because some of you are saying, all right, Sophia, you know, you're talking here, but I'm not really understanding what you're talking about. And what we're really talking about is simply this. To be illiberal is to be the opposite of liberal. Liberal democracies, liberal arts educations are those things which encourage debate, thought, freedom, dialogue, dissent, disagreement. That's what a liberal arts education is. No one sends their child to college so that they can be silent, so that they can be indoctrinated, so that they can be told what they can think, what they can say, what they can't say, what they can't think, what they can't believe, or else they'll get downgraded on their papers, or else they'll be removed, or else they'll be protested, or else they'll be harassed and bullied. That is the opposite of a liberal arts education. That is the opposite of a liberal democracy. Everybody with me so far? Okay. So putting this into context for you, and this is going to be a long podcast. This is kind of a primer because I want you to understand what's happening. Because we get caught up in our passions, and passion is good. We want people that are passionate. But you can be passionate and civil. You don't have to go to the president of your university's home like they did here in D.C. at George Washington University and go to that person's door and block their ability to come in and out of their house, or their guests to come in and out of their house, or to make them feel unsafe and to have to call the police. That is not a peaceful protest, folks. That's a violation of law. It's not lawful to block streets. It is not lawful to threaten, to menace, to say to the river, to the sea, and basically say that a whole group and race and creed of people should be annihilated because you don't agree with the political position or the military position that that government has taken. Israel, folks, just like the United States, just like Canada, just like Great Britain, France, Germany, Italy, all of them are sovereign nations, sovereign countries with heads of states, with military, with leaders, with parliaments, with congresses. And they decide when they have been attacked or assaulted or threatened, how they respond. We don't have to like it. We don't have to agree with it. And it is okay to raise your voice about that. It is okay to say to the president of your university and the trustees, we, the students, would like to have a meeting with you. We would like to have dialogue, or the faculty, whatever. But you don't have to camp on the campus grounds and destroy commencement for everybody else. You don't have to deface property and urinate and throw feces around. That's what animals do. That's what happened at the very cradle of our democracy, at our Capitol on January 6, 2021. That is not protected speech. That is not speech. That is thuggery. That is bullying. It is menacing, and it is using violence and coercion and the heckler's veto and any other word I can come up with from the text of the Supreme Court decisions and other decisions about how we do freedom here in the United States of America. It's what makes us different than other places in the world. It's why everybody wants to come here and be here, because we do freedom differently. We believe in the right to assemble. We believe in the right to peaceful protest. We believe in the right to civil disobedience. But to this new generation of Americans and to the class of 2024, I want to talk to you for a moment. And I accept full responsibility as a Gen Xer and the baby boomers and those who came before me and my generation. We failed you. I think of my young nieces who I adore. They're young women now. They're beautiful young women. One is serving her country. Just, we're so proud of her. And the other is a college graduate who is brilliant and smart and doing great things. But I think back to how much I indulged and how much we gave gifts and we hovered and we tended to and we protected and we did all those things because perhaps those of us who were in Gen X and those of us who were baby boomers didn't get those same protections. I was a latchkey kid. You know, we'd laugh about this all the time, me and my friends, that our parents would be in jail now for giving a kid a key at the age of 6 or 7 and saying, go home after school, stay there till I get back, and do not make any noise. Do not go outside. Do your homework. Don't let anybody in the house. Or the way that our parents reprimanded us, the way that we dealt with a lot of trauma and a lot of crazy, and we kind of had to suck it up and be resilient and keep going. And I think we didn't want that for this next generation. And that's a good thing, because I do think there's that thin line of what's abusive and what's proper and what's healthy and what's not healthy. My point is this, that we've taught you to be all about your feelings. And we've taught you that you're entitled to have your feelings, even when you're not entitled to have them, when you're in a classroom or when you're at a job interview or when you're at your job. Some 28 people got fired from Google in the last month because they thought they could protest at their job. When you go from the campus to the corporate campus, they are not the same. And we are not preparing you for life. Some of you have decided to protest, to sit in, to be in encampments, to overtake administration buildings. And some of you have been suspended. Some of you have been removed from your schools, commencement speakers, taken down. That is not what you want for your future. That is not how you want to start your life. There are other ways to have your voice be heard. You can protest. You can march. Dr. King and Gandhi gave you the best examples on earth in the history of man, perhaps other than Jesus himself, about how to get your point across without having to raise your fist and be violent or be angry or be a mob. And I think we need to really spend some time studying that, because those models were effective and they brought about change that was sweeping, that moved the hearts of men and women who were not treating others well, who were not doing the right thing, who were not listening to fairness or reason or rightness. We have failed you because we have taught you to be in your feelings. We have taught you to not only be upset and angry, but to ghost, cut off, delete, block, not have courageous conversations, not talk about it, feel how you feel, be done. Exact consequences on others that you would never want exacted on you. You guys are over anxious. You're over stressed. You're over worried. And you are soft in the sense that you do not do well with criticism. You do not do well with the hard things because we have taught you not to. And that is our fault. And I'm telling you that what we're seeing right now not only doesn't get you where you want to go and getting your point across, in moving things in the direction you'd like to see them go. I would hope that all of us want humanitarian relief to get through. I would hope that all of us believe that the escalation and the violence and the missiles and the war would stop. But again, you have to follow something from its beginning to its end. Hamas is responsible for what has happened, not Israel. Israel is a country that was not just threatened. People were murdered. There are over 100 plus hostages that still have not been recovered. We are 7 months in. Some as young as a year or 10 months old or older now because they were babies and infants when they were taken. People were raped. They were murdered. They were slaughtered. We've lost sight of our humanity if we can't see the other side of this. Yes, 30,000 Palestinians in Gaza or humanitarian workers or relief workers or soup kitchen workers, all of those lives are precious. And this is a tragedy. But I do not know one instant in history, not in my Bible, not in my history books, not in ancient Rome, not in ancient Greece, not in ancient Mesopotamia, not in ancient Egypt. I can think of no civilization where there was war, where there was not mass death, mass casualty, mass destruction. This is not new. Is it right? Of course it isn't. So raise your voices. Sit down. You're intellectuals. You're at a university. Think, debate, talk, listen. Listen when it's uncomfortable. Listen when you don't want to hear it. And then stop and think about it. And take a walk and think about it some more. And then come back and persuade the other guy sitting across from you why he's probably not right and why he should see it your way. And then let him try to persuade you. That's what a liberal arts education is, folks. It is not banning the professor we don't like because she sent a tweet and she asked a civil question. It is not getting whooped up in a frenzy and sending emails to your colleagues talking about, woo, let's go, let's get her. That's not what you do. That is not how you treat your fellow citizens, your fellow students, faculty, leadership. This is not a zero-sum game where somebody has to lose so that you can win or vice versa. We're failing. You have to have discourse, even when it's uncomfortable. What are you going to do in marriage, in your relationship, in your family when it gets hard? Are you going to quit? Are you going to walk away? Are you just going to cut people off and be done? Or are you going to try? Are you going to try to talk? Are you going to try to mediate? Are you going to try to listen? Are you going to try to see it from the other person's point of view? Or are you just going to pop off and say, you hurt my feelings. I'm unsafe. I'm triggered. You cannot go through life like that. It will not work out well for you. Some of you have already ruined yourselves before you got started because you got caught up in your passion and your emotions and you didn't think strategically and calmly about what is the result I want and how do I get that result in a way that elevates, that builds bridges, and that gets the bloodshed stopped, that helps to feed hungry people, and that creates an atmosphere where Jewish students are safe and where we can also speak to the rights of those that we believe are being oppressed and murdered. I mean, isn't that really the issue that we're discussing? So, you know, I live here in the Commonwealth of Virginia. Our governor gave a speech at Virginia Commonwealth University for commencement, and dozens of students got up and walked out, turned their backs, and walked away in the middle of his remarks. Now, again, they have the right to do that. It was a sign of protest. They don't like Governor Youngkin's policies. They don't like the fact that he was someone who was very vocal about quashing, the campus, not just the protests, but those that were camping on the grounds and setting up camp and encampments. So I get that. But what I would have preferred and what I would have loved to have seen was those students sit there and listen and then had pre-negotiated with their president and with their leadership and with the governor's office. Governor, we're going to listen to your speech. And when you're done, we want to sit down with you and break bread. And we want to talk. And we want you to hear us. Because that's what our founding fathers did when they met in Philadelphia. Do you think that John Adams of Massachusetts and Mr. Pinckney of South Carolina got along? They did not. Do you think that Ben Franklin of Pennsylvania and George Washington or Thomas Jefferson saw eye to eye? They did not. These were men from different parts of the country. These were men with different sensibilities. Some had slaves. Others were avid abolitionists and were appalled and thought slavery as it was abhorrent. But they sat in a room together and they saw the bigger goal and they found their commonality. They did not focus on their differences. And in doing so, they formed a new nation. That nation will be 250 years old in 2026. If we make it right now, I don't know. I have a big question mark, but that's another podcast for another day. I want you to understand that we're at a critical moment. Will we be a liberal democracy that cherishes freedom and the individual and liberty? Or will we increasingly become a country where one group decides that it's got to be this way, that it's our country and we need to roll things back? Women don't have the right to decide their own reproductive health. That's ludicrous in 2024. Ludicrous. I am a religious Christian conservative. I mean, really, really religious. But I understand that that's my religion. That's my faith. That's my view. And I should have a right to talk about that just as someone has a right to say, I don't agree, or I'm an atheist, or I'm not a Christian. I'm a Hindu. I'm Jewish. Whatever it is, there has to be respect for one another's differences. I believe in freedom. I am an absolutist, a purist when it comes to freedom. And I do not under any circumstance want some woman who has a different choice to make than me curtailed by my faith beliefs, because that's against the very founding principles of this country. We believe in religious liberty, the right to have it or not have it at all. We believe in freedom, the right to pursue life, liberty, and happiness, unfettered, untouched, unassailed by the state. But that's not where we're headed, folks. So we got to back up and we got to slow down and we got to rethink this thing. And we have got to do better with Gen Y and Gen Z in teaching them how to navigate, to work through, to be strategic, and to be focused without getting in their feelings. Let me end with this. All of us has feelings. Every single one of us, we have feelings. We get hurt. We get angry. We get emotional. We get upset. We get excited. We get happy. We fall in love. We fall out of love. We love, then we hate. We like, then we don't like. It's the human condition. It is never going to change. What makes us different here in the United States of America is that we put freedom first. We make freedom our cornerstone. Civil liberties, life, liberty, free thought, free ideas, entrepreneurism, free business. I can go work for a company or I can create one myself. The right to marry. The right to love, the right to be taken care of and be well when you're sick, to have insurance, to be treated with dignity. These are things that we value. They are at our core. So what are we doing? Trying to clamp down and shut down and remove and delete and give consequences to people and have my speech be bigger than yours and my problem's bigger than yours. What's good for me is not good for thee. That's our motto now. It's all about me and what I want and what matters to me, and what you want and what you need doesn't matter at all. That's not America. That is not who we are. And that is not who I hope we are going to become and end up being when all is said and done. Illiberalism is when you want to shut down free speech, free thought, free ideas, free everything. Illiberalism is when we want to take a set of values that the group has, and it's usually a very small, very vocal, very powerful group that decides what everybody else should believe in. Ever see The Hunger Games? Ever read 1984? That's what that is. The small group, the oligarchs, the leaders, the Putins, the whoever, they think they know best, and they tell everybody else that they better fall in line or else. That has never been who we are, and I pray God it will never be who we are. I'll be back with a lot more on this, and I'm going to bring some guests back. It's been a busy season, been caretaking and dealing with a lot of things, as you know. I've been pretty transparent, but I'm starting to see daylight, so I'm looking forward to a good summer and an election that's going to be critical for the future of this country, of this great republic. God bless you and keep you until we meet again. Happy Mother's Day.